Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. This is the first time I've ever done a live in-person interview.
That's crazy.
Yeah, isn't it?
That's weird.
Sahi Lavinia, last time I interviewed him, he didn't have office space. He came all the way here. We rented space for him at Regis, like on the same floor. We shook hands. Good to see you. Nice flip-flops. I like your toes. He goes into his own room. He's like, Andrew, what am I here for?
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Right?
I remember that.
With like a camera staring him in the face. And the reason we did that is because over the years, what I wanted to do was be in entrepreneurs' faces, in their offices, in their homes.
Yeah.
And I felt like that would give me a good sense of who they were. And when you came, I just wasn't equipped for it because I'm meant to do interviews like that. So you happened to come in here. I said, let's do it the way we're used to doing it. The reason I've got these cameras, Dave from UseProof was asking me about this is, my plan is I'm going to travel the world, run marathons on all 7 continents. And when I say marathons, I'm not doing like this 4-miler and calling it a marathon. 26.2 on each continent. And as I travel the world.
Is that what I signed up for?
No. You said for this.
At least I did wear both glasses.
Devin Meadow says, capture the moment while you're doing it. You're traveling the world. Take photos. Get to know people. Record it. And this freaking guy's a professional videographer. You guys should see the equipment that he's got set up around here. And I wanted to interview entrepreneurs as I went because I feel like I'm not capturing enough of the entrepreneurial experience. I'm getting only America, largely Silicon Valley, even when people aren't in Silicon Valley. Like Dave is running useproof.com from Austin. It's basically Silicon Valley, just a little bit further south, right? Same mindset, AZ?
Basically.
Right? And so I wanted to get a sense of it. So I'm traveling the world. And then Sahil does this post where he says, hey, on Twitter, remember me? Here's my revenue. And I thought your business was dead. I thought you went and did something else. It wasn't dead. His business is doing well. Not well enough to get funded, but well. Maybe well enough to get funded. We'll find out.
Maybe.
And what I was trying to figure out is what happened. What happened that made him lay off his team? What happened that got him to turn things around and got him to be so comfortable with how things are doing that he's now sitting here and doing this interview? All right. So Sahil Lavinia is here. He is the founder of Gumroad. If you want to sell anything digitally online, like I bought ebooks, I generally go to Gumroad. If you want to buy icons and things like that, that are digital products without having to set up the website, the credit card processing, right?
Yeah,
that's
totally.
The ones to go with.
Yeah, I mean, the simple idea is like, you know, people have Twitter accounts and YouTube accounts and, you know, Instagram and Facebook. And like, a lot of people have huge audiences and don't have anything else, you know? And so why build a storefront? Why at least get started selling stuff directly? And yeah.
And that's what you did. You did great. You got incredible funding. We'll talk about how you did it. Thanks to 2 phenomenal companies. The first, any, you guys haven't used TopTel yet, have you?
We have.
You have?
That's how we launched Proof.
Oh! Is there a way to get him on camera later to talk about that in the ad?
Yeah, we'll talk about it.
All right, Dave.
That was our first engineer that we hired to help us launch Proof.
I need to do that. All right, I need to bring you on. All right, and the second sponsor is a company that will host your website, right? It is called HostGator. I'll talk about both of those. Sahil.
Yes.
John, venture capitalist from Greylock.
Yeah.
Sits you down. When was this? 2014?
Yeah, winter 2014.
And you guys have a meal where?
I think we met at Koopa Cafe in Palo Alto.
Okay.
I think that's the only place I've ever met that guy.
And are you going into this meeting? This is like the first indication that something big is happening in your life, not what you expected. Did you go into the meeting thinking, I'm going to impress him and raise the next round from him?
I came into the meeting thinking that I would have a really good idea. My goal was to go back to the team. You know, we had 20-ish people at the time and tell them that we were going to have an easy time raising Series B. That was
okay.
And this was like the first signal I needed, you know, to sort of be able
you
to
had a deck. Claim.
I had a deck that I was
like on an iPad?
Yeah, I think so.
And you're like sliding through going, this is our revenue, this is our growth, we're doing well, right?
Yeah.
We know we're going. And he says what?
You're going to have a hard time raising a Series B. We'd already raised, you know, 7 and a bit. Or $8 million.
Okay.
Great investors, right? Like, we were growing, like, but not amazingly. But, you know, the market was, like, really frothy. You know, plenty of cash everywhere. I thought it was not going to be that difficult. And he says, like, you might have a hard time. VCs don't like saying, like, it's not going to work, right?
So then do you go home feeling, hard time. I've had hard times before in my life. I could do it. You do.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Oh, 100%.
So this, like, the delusion, the entrepreneurial delusion gets fed by that. And you're like, all right, he didn't say no. I think we could do this.
Yeah, I think we were such product idealists. Like, we'd really just spent tons of time, like, building this, like, phenomenal product. And we could easily just grow the company if we needed to, right? It was just, like, a shift in focus that would get us to those numbers, right?
And that's what you were thinking.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. That's what I told the team. That's what I believe. I mean, that's what I believe.
And a handful of other investors gave you the same response that John did.
Yeah, totally. Danny from Index, Mike from Kalina Perkins. Like,
are you saying this kind of like, hey, guys, I'm still standing? Is that why you're mentioning their name?
No. Honestly, VCs, like, they're pretty unemotional, I think. Like, they, you know, they're going to invest in the company if they think it's a good deal most of the time, and they're not if they don't. Like, they're not.
So you didn't feel anything negative towards them. You just felt like, what's wrong with me?
Yeah, or what? Yeah, basically. I don't have any ill will towards any of these.
Okay.
Yeah. And most of them, you know, are friends of the company. I talked to them because I really, they would tell me what they thought, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So what was your revenue and profit at that point? Do you remember?
At that point, I mean, I don't know exactly, but I remember we were burning, you know, probably $350,000 a month.
Okay.
Right. We had a big team, office in San Francisco, things like that. You know, we were making profits, but it was never like enough. You know, we were processing around two and a half, maybe less than that. Maybe I would say around $2 million a month. And, you know, we're taking 6-7% of that. So not enough to offset.
Okay.
Really any people costs at that point.
I've known you since you were in high school, college, right?
Yeah, early. I mean, probably college, USC. 2010, I was probably 17 or 18 at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was 18.
And the thing that stood out for me about Sahil was he was constantly making stuff, right?
Yeah.
Tons of software.
Every weekend, basically. Yeah, apps, websites.
Because what? Everything. You wanted to do what with your life?
I think looking back, sort of, I thought I was going to be like the next, you know, Steve Jobs, Mark Zuckerberg. Like, I had the privilege, I had the wealth, the ability to code. I was young. I was going to be a college dropout soon. It felt like things were, you know, had
right.
that trajectory.
Okay.
Back then, right? I got a mixer interview, like, you know.
You were a kid. I could have sworn I saw braces on your face. I went back and I enlarged it. There were no braces at the time. But you were a kid.
Yeah, totally.
And so, why? Why didn't Gumroad work out? Why didn't it? Well, would you say it didn't work out?
I would say it did not work out in the way that I thought, for sure. You know, I thought Gumroad was going to be a $1 billion company. I tweeted it out. I went back and found this tweet from 2011. You know, that was like, I'm going to build a $1 billion company tomorrow. I'm going to start building a $1 billion company tomorrow.
So you sent me, I thought it was a book. I sit down here, I swear, he's watching me. I sit down over here, I think, I could read a book in 30 minutes. I know I can. And like 5 seconds later, it's a blog post. It's just done. The interesting thing about that blog post was you basically said, I thought this was where I was going to go with my life. I actually grew. Look at this chart. It's impressive. It's not that I didn't grow.
Yeah.
It's just not VC growth.
Yes.
So let's talk about why I didn't go to VC growth. It did really well. What do you think was missing to make it go to that hockey stick all the way up to the moon?
I mean, honestly, a lot of this is going to sound like excuses because they're all just going to be me saying it's not my fault, right? But like really when you want to build a VC business, the market matters, right? Like the growth rate matters, like the product quality doesn't matter. Like these things are sort of secondary in importance. And really the only thing that matters is just revenue, right? It's like how, like what you're doing and how fast you're growing it. And at the end of the day, like nothing else. And we just never achieved, either the market was too small, which I think is the primary reason, or we weren't, you know, the business wasn't sort of in a place to earn a lot of money and capture a lot of that value that
we talked about this before. You're saying the market too small, meaning how many people have an ebook that they want to sell but don't have a website to sell it, right?
Totally.
Okay.
Yeah.
And don't want to sell it on Amazon. How many people have icons to sell and there's not really a home for icons and they do have enough of a customer base to support it?
Totally.
That's the thing. You're saying maybe we just hit our limit in the number of people who could do this.
I think we hit a ceiling for sure. And that ceiling, you know, is growing every single day, right? Like the universe is expanding, but at the end of the day, I think we sort of saturated, for lack of a better word, the market. And I think
I meet people all the time that are like, man, Gumroad could be so big. If blank, right? And they're always like, let's do a call or whatever. And like, I'm like, I've spent like a long time, like I laid off like the majority of my company. Like, believe me, I was looking for every reason to believe that, right? And I would, and often like those calls end with like, oh, you're right. And I think that that's the reason. Like, I always say like the independent creator movement is just not that big, right? It's just not. One Marvel movie sort of per year is bigger than sort of the independent creator movement.
What about like the t-shirt guys, Teespring? What about the guys who are help? No, I saw you.
I mean, I think if you compare Teespring to the Warriors, like the Warriors as a t-shirt company, like that, like the, you know, you're taking independents, people that sort of by definition are not that big, and it's power law, right? So the Warriors are like over there, and then, you know, it's like this, and you're taking the long tail, but even you sum all that stuff up,
right?
It's just not that big.
You think isn't that who Shopify is going after? Isn't that no. who they're not?
No,
that's, I mean, not the bread and butter.
They might be going after them, but like in terms of really, if you look at Square, right? Like when they signed Starbucks up, like that's 30% of their GMV, right?
And what about if like a shopping site, I won't pick on Shopify, if what they do is they charge a monthly fee,
yeah,
so that even if you sell nothing, you still pay monthly and you don't have a monthly hosting fee.
Yeah.
Right?
We added that, actually. We did add that.
And did that help?
So that helped.
Okay.
And it definitely sort of leveled our growth off a little bit. But really what you're doing is you're signaling. That's when we realized we couldn't build that business, right?
Then you might as well capitalize on the customers that you have. It's not going
to. It's a transition.
You're not going to end up with the world of people who are creatives who just don't have the hustle to sell, but they're willing to pay monthly to keep your dream alive.
When you're taking a transaction fee, like a 5%, you know, we're like Stripe, we're like Square. Like, you got to be processing billions of dollars a year.
Right? Were you in a relationship at the time?
No.
No, okay.
No.
You're saying when you're in those places, you've got to be charging billions of dollars a year.
Yeah.
And you can't get to billions of dollars selling. So one of the things we talked about before we started is maybe you could have changed to a different product. Like, I'm thinking Teachable.
Teachable,
right? Could you have gone to there and made it? Or is Teachable in the same boat? Because they have to get creators to create courses, and then they make money only when creators create courses.
I think Teachable has picked a bigger market, for sure. I know a couple of people that work there.
Why is the market for courses bigger than the market for digital? I don't know how to
digital content sales. Yeah, downloadables, I guess. Right? Like, I mean, partly it's you know, it's like education, right? It's like when you go broadly in terms of that pattern, like, and you remove the downloadable, you're going to Lynda, you're going to Skillshare, you're going to Udemy. What you're selling is knowledge, and it doesn't actually even exist in terms of like a digital asset, right? So I think that market is far. I mean, Lynda is way bigger than Teachable is, right? Like Master
because.
Is probably bigger than Teachable.
Because?
I think a lot of people are willing to... I mean, what is Netflix? I think Netflix is education, right? People watch documentaries, people... Like, that's... I think Netflix gives people that sense of productivity, but that feeling of entertainment, right?
Well, all these companies that you just brought up, they charge monthly fee except for Teachable. Would that have been a thing to, like, combine?
I mean, maybe. I think maybe if we went back in time and we're like, we're going to build this as a SaaS company from the get-go, but I think we thought about it like we're going to build this massive distributed marketplace.
Selling one-off things.
One-off things, that's the other thing, right? One-off things it's hard. Everyone is starting from scratch every single month.
You know, Devin, what I wish we had was even more lavaliers. You fucking guys know more. We should bleep out the curses. No, we shouldn't. They know more about this than anyone else. If we could mic them, I don't think it's going to sound as good.
Just let me grab the camera, man. We got the mic right on the camera. As long as I use this guy, we're fine.
Okay.
But yeah, you know, Teachable is going after, like, the Tony Robbins, right? Like,
to sell to the big course makers and make... Got it.
Yeah, I mean, they're going after the people that are making, you know, $10 million a year per creator. If you can even... I wouldn't even call Tony Robbins a creator. He's a brand, right? And I think a lot of... that growth is coming from people that are really selling something deeper than just like the content. And I think Gumroad was just never...
Is it helpful for us to go through this? I find that it's helpful for me.
Yeah, no, I'm down.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm down to go through
this. Because I know ultimately things work out, and we'll talk about to what degree they work out, so I feel okay doing this.
Yeah,
but
brutalize me.
The thing that I'm just fascinated by... I did ask if you were dating someone at the time. Let me ask you this on a personal level.
Yeah.
Can you, when you're going through this, date anyone?
I didn't. I feel like when things don't work out well for me, I don't have enough self, a sense of self-worth.
Yeah.
To, nah, it's not that exactly, but I have to get to where my worth is before I could date. Did you feel that? Like, it's not that I feel insecure or have low self-esteem or so low self-worth. It's more like, I can't go out and date someone or be with someone until I achieve who I think I am.
Yeah.
And so I cut off everyone. Did you do that?
I think I did, but I did not do it intentionally.
Like, it's just you recognize now, but what did you feel at the time?
Totally. I felt like I had, you know, I was busy. Like, it was really not super sort of deep. It was just like, I need to make this thing work. And like, any time I spent not making this thing work is like lost time.
Okay.
I can always do that other stuff. I remember, like, I went back for winter and saw my parents, and, you know, I was talking to my mom about this like journey and stuff, and she was like, you know, I never, like, you never told me about the layoffs. Ever. Like,
she read about it?
She read about it in TechCrunch.
And did she talk to you about it afterwards, or she just felt
she was like,
he doesn't want to talk about it?
Yeah.
And you didn't tell your mom because?
I don't think we ever talked about it until literally, like, you know, however many years, 3+ years later. Yeah. It's pretty gnarly. I never thought about it. You know, I didn't know that until she told me. But like,
that's a sense of insecurity that comes from that, or a sense of...
Oh, 100%.
Like, it is.
Totally.
Like, your mom saw you at a certain value, and you didn't hit that, and you don't want to... Come.
Oh, 100%. Which is not how parents think, but that's how I'm sure that's how I felt.
Oh, my parents think that. My parents look at me, and they think he's meant for something. Yeah.
Bigger than you, what you did, or what you're doing?
Maybe bigger than this, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I do know that when I used to send my dad pictures of checks from my previous company, and he was like, of course, now more. Right?
They want their affiliate fee or something?
I don't think that they were at that. It was more like, this is what I always said. Now, if we could find a way to rub it in some friend's faces, and that we could. Because this guy was a real asshole. Like me, I was a real asshole growing up. I was like, I told you guys.
That's what you are. Yeah, you're like a trophy for your friend, for your parents' friends, you know.
Yeah,
my parents would brag about it.
No,
that's what at least I remember.
I think there was a bit of that for sure.
I mean, I remember my mom was. I don't think she was more concerned about what other people thought, right? But like the way, like she was. I'm sure she was like, you know, this happens or whatever. Like, it's fine. She was concerned about me, but what sucks is everyone else, right? And the thing is that I think was really difficult about that time was that every single person had a different view of me. And I didn't, because I never talked about it publicly, I wasn't able to kind of, like, level set. So every time I met up with someone, I had no idea if they thought Gumroad was 20 people, if they thought Gumroad was 5 people, if they did, like, you know, like, it was...
You mean
depends
after,
on all of these.
After the layoffs?
Yeah, totally.
Okay.
Yeah. And like, you know, like, the last big article, which was probably less than a year ago, is, like, you know, some, like, Fast Company, like, spread, right? And it's... Which can happen. And so I'm like, let's just pretend that everyone thinks I'm still there. And then enough time goes by, and it's like, fuck, I wonder what people think. It turns out people thought I went bankrupt.
They did.
Yeah. So, yeah, maybe I should have talked about it a little bit more, but, yeah.
And you didn't because you were heads down or because you were just too embarrassed?
I think it started out because I was heads down, but then at some point it's like, you know, it's like too late. It's like, I should have talked about it 6 months ago. There's no point in talking about this now.
Can we get a camera on Dave for the ad?
Sure.
How great is this?
This is good.
I would love to just talk
into these things. I'm just like,
I'd love to talk to you about what you're going through, but you're not. You did?
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's great.
I heard it on a Mixity interview.
All right. is this that cam? That mic can pick it up?
Yeah.
All right. I don't want to like talk over myself. Why don't we do this? First sponsor is a company called TopTal. It's a place where you can hire developers. Dave runs a site, a company called Proof, but I like to call it UseProof. Is that the URL?
It's against my will. You call it UseProof, but that is the URL.
Because you know how much of a pain in the neck it is for me? At least with freaking Gumroad, I can go and look up Gumroad, right?
Gumroad.com.
So it's super easy to find. And if I forget it's Gumroad.com or what, I type in Gumroad something, it comes up on Google.
Just find like a random word.
I'm in trouble.
Gumroad.com.
You are.
But Proof is a cool name.
It's a great name, and you're lucky that everyone who uses it.
It's an expensive domain.
So people who don't know, what Proof does is when somebody buys something on your site, Proof will come up to the next person who's on your site and say, hey, look, someone from San Francisco just bought. Hey, someone from Chicago just bought, right? So it does really well. And so that's getting you a lot of links back when people keep the link back to you, right? And so you heard me talk about TopTal.
So we were launching Proof, or wanted to launch Proof. We had one developer that, or my co-founder could develop, and he was a programmer, and we needed some more capacity, and I heard you talking about TopTal, and it was like, go online and just buy a developer online. It was like, you know, Amazon for developers or something. And I'm like, well, you're like, you know, you had some discount. It was like your first, you know,
what 80 hours.
Yeah, first 80 hours free.
After you pay for 80 hours, your next 80 hours is free.
Yeah. There's, and we were like, that's an amazing deal. So we just went on there, got set up, and like a couple days later had this like amazing senior engineer that helped us like lay a strong foundation for Proof to go launch on. So it was huge for us.
And they helped build the Proof.
Yeah, they helped build like the very first lines of code to like say, hey, we don't know what we don't know, and you've been around the block a few times, so we want someone like pretty senior to come and like help us set it up.
Two more questions, and then we'll get back to the interview. Number one is, why didn't you use one of the cheapo free freelance sites where you could have hired a freelancer? And number two, why didn't you put Help Wanted ads?
I think we didn't use Help Wanted ads because we didn't know how to hire. I didn't know what to look for. I was like, I see someone that's like vetted, that's like ready to start tomorrow.
And then TopTal also does something else for you. They talk to you and help you refine who you want to hire.
Yes, totally.
Okay, why not the freelance sites that are super inexpensive?
I had 5 years ago, I hired a guy on Upwork. I don't know if I can say competitors' names
here. You can
talk about it, yes. But yeah, it's kind of the same thing. It's, I don't know what I'm looking for. These guys aren't vetted. It was like, I've got the idea. I need to start. I'm going to go somewhere where I can get somebody really vetted. So that's why. And I trusted you. I hadn't met you yet, but I was like, Andrew wouldn't let me down here.
I really wouldn't. And if anyone out there with any of my sponsors has any issue, you can contact me and let me know. It's andrew@mixergy.com. I really do talk to sponsors about this and make sure that I'm not promoting anything that my audience isn't happy with. All right. And can you say what your revenues are? You told me over dinner, but I'm not going to reveal it because it was private.
Yeah. I mean, last numbers I think we're sharing is like 230,000 MRR.
230,000 monthly recurring revenue. Okay. Mm-hmm. That was a while back, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was not too long ago, but.
Okay. Yeah. That's so much that I want to ask you, but you're not ready to talk about it yet because I know you're still going through stuff, right?
We've got something new we're working on, and I want to talk to you about it once it's launched. It's super exciting.
His name is AZ.
AZ?
Yeah, your finance guy. AZ's looking at you like, don't get sucked in with the whiskey. I swear I was looking at your face.
What he would reveal.
We talked about this.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you. For anyone who's listening, all you have to do to get the same exact offer that Dave at Proof got is just go to toptal.com/mixergy. It's top as the top of your head. Tal is in talent, toptal.com/mixergy. There's a whole lot more that comes with that, but when you go to that URL, you'll see it. All right, and if you guys want to like jump in here with anything or analysis, I'm going to call and ask you for analysis.
Cool.
But if you want to interrupt, let me know. Just like signal to me somehow.
Cool.
All right, let's go into the turnaround. Why don't we start with the day you laid people off. We'll go one last like tough day, and then what do you do the day after that helps things turn around? So the day you tell people it's time, it wasn't a huge shock for them because?
Well, you know, and after I met with John and some of these other folks, we knew it was going to be difficult, and I've always been super open. I was open with the other investors, you know, that were already on board, and we had a great list of them, right? And so I knew I could raise money. So I really felt like if we got the numbers where they needed to be, like, we could do this. And that's what I told the team January at, like, our all-hands meeting for the year. I told everyone, like, this is going to be brutal. But if we get these numbers, it will be pretty
nice. You know what? And that's something we should talk about. You didn't get the next round.
Yeah.
You got a bridge.
Yes. So it's sort of concurrently, you know, we could have done the layoff sooner. But the minute you do that, I mean, you're like bleeding, right? Like, VCs are not excited about stuff like that. And so I talked to Mike from Kleiner, and we said, you know, we'll put together a bridge that Kleiner would lead for $2 million. And that would give us time to keep the team. And it was like, you know, it was kind of like a go big or go home.
What's the difference between a bridge and another round of financing?
Just semantics. Okay. A bridge is like the pessimistic word that you would use. It's just like not, it's like signaling that we need more money.
Okay.
So you're saying, look, it's just getting us.
This is not what you need. Yeah. It's not what you asked for. It's just going to get you to a place where you can prove that you deserve the rest.
Totally.
Okay. And so they gave you how much?
Totally. $2 million.
$2 million.
Yeah.
That's enough for how long, roughly?
An extra 9 months-ish.
Okay, and you told the team.
Yeah, told the team. Kleiner gave us this money. We got some extra money from Mark Cuban. And, we're just going to work really hard. We're going to do the things that we say we're going to do around growth and really focus on the numbers. Nothing else matters. And if it works out, you know, October-ish, like, we're going to raise $15 million or more. And if we don't hit the numbers, like, I'm going to try and probably fail.
I feel like that would be a really good motivator for the first few months.
Yeah.
And then it wouldn't be.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great motivator the whole time.
It was,
yeah.
People don't feel even close to the end, oh, we didn't do it, because...
I don't think so. I mean, I think, you know, it's like you signed up to fight a battle, you know, and, like, the harder the battle gets, almost, like, the more people dig in, you know? Like, we were so difficult, so much, and, I don't know, people joined government because they wanted to turn something that wasn't huge into something huge, right? And so given the opportunity to, I think, be part of that story, I think people were totally... I mean, everyone's still getting paid, right? I'm not asking anyone to sort of sacrifice on a financial level to do this.
Okay.
So I think... Yeah,
but they're not looking... Okay, so you guys started to pump out stuff.
Yeah, we were shipping so...
What did you ship? I have a list, but you know.
Oh, man. I mean, we shipped tons of payout stuff. We launched payouts to, like, the UK and Australia and Canada. We launched
and the benefit of that is, look, now you can start enabling people in the UK and Australia and other countries to sell. So launching payouts doesn't mean you can pay these people. It means you can enable them to sell on your platform.
Totally.
It's really expanding your market.
Yeah.
I would have thought that alone would help. UK, Australia, Canada. Very similar to the US.
Totally.
It didn't do it.
Didn't do it. I mean, it helped a little bit, but honestly, like, I think, you know, I will go back to the market thing. Like, we picked a market. It was a certain size. People found ways to sell, even though they weren't in the countries we were paying out to, sort of, you know, and, you know, we launched product recommendations. We updated a lot of our email features. Nothing.
Email features being what?
You know, like workflows, allowing people to email a subset of their customer base if they bought above a certain price. Like, really, really, really tried to figure out, like, how we expand our market to people that are, you know, selling a lot more stuff.
Okay.
Just didn't.
It didn't do it.
Didn't do it.
What about, there was one thing that I saw in the blog post you sent me, which was enabling people to create landing pages faster.
Yeah, we launched, that was like our last Hail Mary. We called it Audience, and it was sort of like, trying to really, like, grow our market, right? We you know, we talked about this before. Like, there just weren't enough people selling content, like creators selling, like, ready to sell digital ebooks, things like that, right? So we thought, wait, what if we started earlier in the funnel and we actually started helping people build their audience so that they'd be ready to do that? So we launched a thing called Audience. And I don't regret doing any of this, but, you know, at the end of the day, we were building these sort of, like, supplementary things to Gumroad. We weren't, like, really redoing the core of the product. And I think if anything would have worked, it would have had to have been, like, a fundamental reshift of, like, what Gumroad meant. It probably would have had to do with, like, pissing off a lot of our existing user base and just, like, being like, those guys don't make enough money, like, let's go over there, you know?
What do you think that would have been?
I think we could have gone deep into membership stuff, you know. I think we could have maybe focused on, like, educational content, influencers, right? Like, people that make $10 million a year selling these, like, $2,000 packages. You know, we had tons of success helping people like Eminem and Bon Jovi sell these, like, crazy physical merchandise packages. We could have totally, I'm sure, built a great business doing that.
It's going after these bigger guys.
But, like, that's not why we built Gumroad. You know, that's not why I raised money for the people we raised money from. That's not why people signed up to join
Gumroad. But honestly, isn't the reason you created Gumroad was to be a billionaire?
That, I thought so. Definitely that's what I thought for a long period of time. I thought I was on that
trajectory. But you thought when the rubber meets the road, you're not going to shift from enabling people to create and sell content to enabling Eminem to sell more tchotchkes to his people.
That's fun. That was it. I think, I don't know. I mean, maybe it sounds like sort of pretentious or something, but, like, I felt like we committed publicly to building a specific product, right? And I'd almost rather just shut down the thing and do that again, right? Like, I don't know. It's not that revolutionary. You know, it was important for me to build something worth a lot because I felt like that was a way to indicate that we built something super valuable. But at the end of the day, like, you know, we wanted to build a very specific thing for a specific group of people. We told them we were going to build something like that. And, you know, we were processing $2.5 million around the time of the layoffs and, like, just saying, like, sorry, like, we're going to turn that faucet off. Like, I don't think I could have done that. And I think, frankly, I think the team would have been pissed because, like, we worked really hard for that demographic and to just go say sorry, like, we're not, I want to actually still be a billionaire and this is not going to do it, so, like, you know, I don't know, maybe that would have worked, and, you know, but
we should say we're drinking Talisker that was given to me by a Scotch Night guest, Trent, who said my wife's the saying thanks for all the great years of content. I'm trying to keep, when people give me a gift of whiskey, first of all, I don't open it as much because I feel like it's from them. I want to save it. For some reason, it has sentimental value in the sentence. You can see there's dust on it. And second, I'm trying to keep the note so that I remember. We're going to do this one after this. But let's do one more pour of this, and then we're going to go for the Australian, okay?
Sounds good.
We're drinking whiskey. I'm surprised everyone was into whiskey. You didn't drink coffee, so I thought maybe you would drink
right. We actually have a whiskey hour at Proof.
You do?
Yeah.
A whiskey hour at Proof.
I think I got it from being inspired by you.
80 proof?
Whiskey.
Yeah.
You just stick to the depressants.
Yeah, at the end of the day.
In that case, here, let me let you pour this, and we're going to go...
Yeah, I'm curious, was part of the value proposition, did you drive traffic to buyers as well, or did they have to do their own traffic?
They had to do their own traffic. Okay. Yeah, so we were just like an e-commerce tool.
Okay.
You know, we were just a tool.
Thank you. Lay them off.
Yeah.
It's time to turn things around. This was now 4 years ago almost.
Yeah, October 2015 was the playoffs.
Okay,
all right,
end of that point. So a little over 3 years.
Yeah.
What's the first thing that you did
after
that worked?
Yeah. I mean, the thing we focused on, you know, I mean, we went from like, you know, $300,000 a month in like operational expenses with the team to like $40,000, right? With mostly just like the office space. And so it was immediately like doable, right? To get to profitability. It wasn't like some crazy moonshot or anything like that. We just focused on a premium offering. So we said, you know, we've never done SaaS. We've always taken this like percentage thing, which meant we basically needed people to sell stuff, and we couldn't force people to do that. But at least we could get people to pay us $10 a month, and then at least every month we have a baseline.
Got it.
Right?
Yeah.
And so that's what we focused on. We said, how fast can we ship like a premium offering of government? What are all the things we would have never built? But we need to now. And so that's what we did. We launched like customization. We launched more filtering for the email stuff. We bifurcated our pricing. So instead of saying it's 5%, we say if you pay us $10 a month, it's 3.5%, like Stripe or something. And then if you're not paying us, you can still do that. It's just 8.5%.
So it's what can we do to get monthly fees? Because if we're not going to have any funding, we need to make sure that we could at least pay the bills every month.
Totally.
And the bills were what? You and four other people?
Yeah, us. Yeah, four other people, me and four other people, the office space.
And then it's email targeting, meaning people are already collecting email addresses.
Yeah, so buyer information. We have all that information. So it's like upsells. How can you get people to, you know, to buy more, right? You can filter like people that bought this product in this time range that paid over this amount.
Got it. So one of the things that I bought was a book on how to use Basecamp, because we use it for project management at my company. Jason Fried, the founder, did a tweet saying there's this new thing available. It's a book to show you how to use it. I clicked the link. It was on Gumroad. I bought it.
Awesome.
Now this guy knows I have Basecamp, right? That's the ideal. That's what you're looking for.
Totally.
This guy does not want to create a website. He just wants to teach what he's been blogging about.
Yeah.
Now he has not just my contact information, but the fact that I bought Basecamp. And if he has an Asana version of the book, he wants to know who the Asana people are. And he can come back and say, if you like Basecamp, we have this other thing for you.
Totally.
And you enable them to do that.
100%.
And people are actually using that. They have enough product.
For sure.
Okay. And also on the email front, if they're just collecting email addresses, you know what they collected it for.
Yeah. Okay. It's great. You can do stuff like, you know, if you want to, you know, you want to do a free thing and collect emails, then you can target all those people that bought that thing and upsell them on this thing. And then you can launch like some premium offering.
$10 a month is pretty low for that.
Yeah. I mean, we wanted to be conservative and make sure that people signed up for it because we needed we needed them to. And we needed them to.
All right. So then that started to work for you.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, did you turn a profit?
It took us 3 or 4 months after we shipped. So it took us maybe 3 months to build all that stuff. We shipped that. I think we launched that in December. So from like, we worked pretty hard. Pretty fast.
It's like a couple months.
Yeah. I mean, we had a good team. We had a really good product team. And by June of 2016, we turned a profit. We made $10,000 that month in profit.
Wow.
Yeah.
How'd that feel?
It was good.
Was it?
Well, yeah, it felt great. I mean, that was the first time, you know, in, I don't know, like 5+ years that I, like, didn't need, like, it was like freedom, you know? Like, I didn't have to, the urgency, right? Like the sort of impending doom, right?
Even when you
have tons of money in the bank and stuff, like there's always this like clock that you're very aware of as a founder. And like that, you know, that the minute that like that Excel thing turns from like 99 months or, you know, like that burn to like
it's an
infinity. Or
did you literally have a spreadsheet with that? With the
I was trying that so hard.
Yeah.
I mean, because the thing is like we did this layoff, and then TechCrunch wrote about it. So
I remember
a lot of people were familiar, a lot more than I thought. Not that many people. It turns out people just didn't want to tell me that they knew. A lot of our cu- customers knew. That's word gets around.
So you know what? I saw it at the time. I didn't reach out to you. Same thing with the HelloSign guys. I remember I used their software for the first time. They said, oh, crap, Andrew's using it. We're fans. They sent me a note. I feel like when they sold their company, when you went through this, it's milestones where everyone's reaching out to you. You're too busy. I don't want to be the billionth guy to say congratulations. I don't want to be the billionth guy to come in and say, sorry to hear it. I don't know. What could I have said? Could I have said something in those situations?
Maybe. I don't know. I think everyone is thinking that, right? Like HelloSign. I was actually an early investor in HelloSign.
I saw that.
Yeah. That was a good weekend. I built Gumroad and invested in HelloSign. One has made me money.
What do you get out of that investment? How much?
I made 16.5x on my investment.
And it was 25,000 or 10?
I was 10.
10, okay.
Yeah, so I made like 165k.
Okay.
Yeah,
hopefully they're okay with me saying that.
I bought an iPad, so
okay.
I haven't gotten my money in the bank yet, but you know, might as well start celebrating.
You want to jump in here?
Yeah.
Okay.
So let's
get the camera on you. We're still trying to figure out how this camera thing is going to work for us. This is Persona. Persona runs an accelerator. You're from India, but the people you accelerate are all over the world.
Yeah.
And David Hauser, a guy who I've known forever, is an investor in your accelerator. He's the founder of Grasshopper.
Yeah.
Okay. And you just happen to be in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
That's how you popped in.
I've been watching and hearing, or more likely, usually, I like to read. So I read your transcripts. I don't listen to them.
Thanks.
That's...
I've been listening for like probably for a very long time now. So I noticed your body language kind of changed and you kind of let out a breath. when you asked him what did it feel like when you hit the 10 grand in
profit. Yeah. Right. You noticed that?
Yeah.
I let out a sigh.
Yeah.
Thank you. Money.
I think you should go into that feeling a bit more than you did, because a lot of people who went through that transition or who are just before that transition.
Yeah.
Don't really realize how good that feels.
Yeah.
You're saying that the people who go through that experience of having a low are so busy focused on the low that they don't realize that once you even get to a $10,000 profit, that's such a release that things are going to be good.
Right. Because I'm just comparing the numbers. He raised like $8 million.
Yes.
And totally. We're talking about a $10 million
with the bridge. Yeah.
$10 million. So we're talking about a $10,000 profit in a month. Those two numbers are like...
It's ridiculous. But, yeah, no, it's true. I mean, the thing is, you know, people always use, like, the terms, like, underwater, like, you know, like, to describe raising money, like, we're underwater, right? And that's kind of what it feels like. Like, it feels like you're drowning. It feels like you're treading water. And you can do that for a long time, right? Years, potentially, but it's draining. And all it takes is, like, one, like, you know, when you step on land or whatever, it takes to extend the metaphor way too far. Like, you're like, I'm not dead, and I will not die today, you know, like that sort of feeling. It's pretty crazy, and it's you're right. I mean, raising, you know, over 10 million bucks and making $10,000, and, you know, that's not even one engineer's salary. Frankly, in San Francisco, I wish it was, but it's not. The thing is, it wasn't about, like, $10,000 in a month. It was, like, we could keep paying creative. You know, like, the Gumroad exists... It's sort of in this like weird, like there's the company Gumroad, there's the investment Gumroad, and then there's like the product Gumroad, right? And so like Gumroad has always just been like this. This is like sort of steady state sort
for
of
people who are listening, thing. Just slightly growing. It's not jumping, but totally. It's consistent, ongoing growth.
When we did the layoffs, $2.5 million. When we were first talked to John Lilly, it was probably closer to 1.8 or something. Now we're at 5, you know, probably in a year we'll be at 7 or 8, you know, like it's maybe more, who knows, but it's always been this steady thing, right? So that, but internally it's been like this, right? And so like when we made the 10,000 in profit, it like aligned me with that external Gumroad, because it meant we could keep doing what we were doing. It, you know, because what could have happened is it was 2.5, 2.6, 2.8, 0, you know? And the minute I was like, that's what it was about, I think. And it was like, this thing's not going away, for better or worse. I think that's what changed.
You know, the thing that I'm wondering is, when I'm at my worst, I don't think I have the wherewithal to figure out what the solution is that's going to get it back to profitability. The thing that I wonder is, How do you get yourself to that when you're feeling really bad about yourself?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, we just, I think you're right, right? Like when you're drowning, you're busy drowning.
At one point in this
blog
post.
You're not doing math in your head or something, right?
Yeah, you sent me a draft of a blog post that you're writing about this. Yeah. And you said, I was smoking weed, having trouble even not. Oh, here we go. Most days I smoked a lot of weed. It was the easiest way to shut off my spiraling thoughts.
Yeah.
Right? Where you just go into negativity and then you feel bad for having.
Totally. About it. Yeah. I mean, part of it was that we had a team. Right? And, like, frankly, like, when you're a founder, like, you, like, sometimes your team is better than you are, right? And, like, we had a team of people that were just, like, I mean, their egos were not on the line as much as mine was, right? And so, like, I mean, most of the time I was working pretty hard, working 16-hour days, especially up to that time. But when the layoffs happened with that TechCrunch article, that's really when, like, those two worlds meet, and it's really difficult. And There were times where I had left the office at like 1 p.m. and like the team wasn't there until 7. Like, it was pretty crazy.
I do find that having other people, the fact that they're just going means you have to keep going. The fact that they can see things
most of the time you pull them up, right, as a founder, but sometimes they pull you up or they don't. They let you leave the office and they just keep going. Like,
I had a situation like that. Richard Erb, our finance guy at Mailbits, we went from like 2 to 3 million a year to suddenly half a million a year. Excuse me, 2 to 3 million a month to half a million a month, which I thought meant I was a big failure. And he just said, do you see where we are right now? Do you see we could cut costs at this level? And Andrew, go out there and run. And I said, but I can't. Everyone else is working. No, you should go out there and run. And then he found ways to cut costs that I wouldn't have put up with. And the fact that I was a little bit, meant he could push me out the door and lead better. And that helps a lot. And the fact that they're all in there working means I can't give up and just sleep and watch TV.
Yeah.
Right?
Totally.
And that's what you feel. Honestly?
Yeah. And they're being paid. I mean, like, the thing is, like, to them, it's a job, right? To me, it's like a vocation. It's like this thing. It's like my magnus opus that is no longer, like, that looks like it might die, right? And so I think that, that does change things.
All right. Let me do my second sponsor, and then we'll talk about what kept happening. And the weird thing that happened with Kleiner Perkins, I can't believe they did this to you.
What a gift. I've never talked about that publicly, so.
All right. Second sponsor, a company called HostGator. You guys know I'm going to be running around the world, every continent. I had this goal, Dave, I'm telling you. 10 years ago, my buddy, John Bischke, forced me to sit down and write what my 10-year goals were. And I said, fucking John Bischke with his get help, like self-improvement stuff. I don't want to do it. But it's awkward not to. So I sat down, I wrote my goals for 10 years. And one of them was to run a marathon on every continent. That was going to be my easy one. Because that didn't depend on the economy, didn't depend on anyone. I could just go and run. So I found it accidentally when I went to Evernote, and I said, what's wrong with me? I didn't do this. And I decided 2019, I'm going to start. I'm going to do it. And I'm running a marathon all over. The thing that I did was, and I'll be honest, partially because HostGator's a sponsor. So I'll create a website for it. Right? You get that plan with HostGator, you get unlimited domain hosting, because what do they care, right? It's like anything beyond like the $2 a month or whatever. Guys, don't quote me. I don't have the info in front of me, but it's a few bucks a month. Anything beyond the tiny, you go to a little bit more, you get unlimited domains. So I created a website for it. And now suddenly there's a thing. If I talk to my team, you see that they treat it differently than a personal hobby because there's a website around it. I had a foot injury. Devin and I went with our cameras, with his camera, in to shoot video at the doctor's office. The fact that there's a website means it's a real thing. It's happening. The doctor's on board. Forget that you don't have an appointment. Let's get you in here and do it. Did I give them a business card with the website? No, people Google you. They see it, right? So the reason I'm bringing this up in a HostGator ad is if you have an idea, a thing, a project, give it its own website. Notice how people treat it differently. Notice how people, including you, start to take it seriously. And if you have HostGator, it's unlimited domains hosted as part of your package. And it's super easy to hit one-click install to have WordPress up. Is your site is custom built. Everything you do is custom.
I was on the similar stuff, Bluehost, which is HostGator.
Owned by the same company. I love when people email me and go, no, I don't use them. I use this other company. All right, congratulations to you. And then I go, just sanity check. They're owned by the same company. It's called Endurance. They own HostGator. They own everyone else that you guys use. Yes. So you were on them. And what did you do?
I also had unlimited domains. I asked a girl to prom.
Using a website?
Using a website with its own custom domain.
Yeah, how great is that?
Yeah, it didn't work. But
she said no.
But everyone in school knew it.
Is that worse?
Oh, yeah.
Do you feel better or worse for doing that?
I feel great, honestly. We're friends. It was fine.
I should say, HostGator.
He was one of those people that's like, you know, the sort of like moralistically opposed to prom or something.
Oh, that it wasn't you.
No,
I don't know. That's what she said. Let me say this. Hostgator.com/Mixergy. Unbeatably low price. All this stuff that I'm talking about. And you get tagged as a Mixergy person. You know what? I tried to get to be class president at Brooklyn Tech. I went all out. I campaigned with my friends. I put posters up. I failed miserably. I came in fourth out of six people.
Was it you?
I'm sure. You know what? Actually, I never thought of that. Here's what I did think.
Don't keep thinking that.
Here's what I thought. I never regretted it because I went all out.
Yeah.
Because I didn't wuss out and I did put posters up because I didn't wuss out and I did tell my friends to go vote and I did say it, you know? And when I realized this is a big moment for me, when you go all out and there's nothing you could in the back of your head go, I wish I'd done this, I wish I'd done that,
yeah.
You feel proud even failing because I'd rather stand up fighting than fall down out of like not having the guts to do it.
Totally.
So do you feel that way about asking her to prom? Like, at least you asked out? I regret the women I didn't ask and the girls I didn't ask.
Oh, totally.
The ones who turned me down.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, those are part of my identity, you know? Like, I'm known to fail, and then...
You are.
Yeah.
And you're okay with knowing if being...
I make so much crap that, like, some things work. And it turns out, like, people remember the stuff that worked. People don't really pay
attention. That's true.
People are too busy with their own lives.
Kleiner. They come back. Kleiner Perkins. Yeah. Best firms. You had incredible people and firms behind you, right?
Yeah, totally.
I mentioned Chris Sacca. You mentioned...
Naval Ravikant.
Naval.
First Round Capital. Kleiner Perkins. Collaborative.
Max Fund. Levchin.
Yeah.
Ron Conway. Yeah. All these people anyway. So Mike from Kleiner Perkins comes over to you and he says what?
Mike... So what happened with Mike is... So we had board meetings every 3 months, right? And when after the layoffs happened, he was so gracious. He's like, I don't think you need to do board meetings anymore. Like, you got enough stuff going on. Like, there's no point. Like, go figure it out and let me know, right? And so we stopped, and we just worked on the product. And, you know, he ended up leaving Kleiner. And I was like, he was like, I'm going to resign from the board. So I said, yeah, sure, that's great. We're not doing anything on that front anyways. And then out of the blue, I got an email from, you know, from Kleiner Perkins that's like, we want... You know, we need a board seat. And I'm like, okay, let's have a call. And they're like, and you know, I talked to them about the business, and they're like, cool, we'll get back to you on a board seat. Like, it's going to take some time. And then got another email that basically was like, we're going to write off the investment. Which, honestly, I mean, that breath of fresh air, like that was, like, almost more than that. Because the thing is, when we got to profitable, we knew we weren't going to die. But there was no exit. Right, we had $16.5 million in liquidation preferences, which basically means you can't sell the company. I mean, like, we're fucked. Right?
That means what? You can't sell the company for
more, like, you basically have to sell the company for more than that to make a dollar.
More than $16 million. You make
$16.5 million.
Yeah. 16.5, and then you split the upside,
and then the rest gets split.
Okay,
so based on yeah.
All right, now they come back to you and they make you an offer, a price for all the shares,
price
which
for
is
$1.
$1. $1.
One single...
Because they just want to write it off and be gone.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a combination of things, and I will never know the full story, right? Like, who knows what happened behind the scenes, but I think they... Like, the operational overhead, the tax write-off benefit, just, like, the goodwill, I don't know. Who knows? I didn't want to ask too much, right? I don't want to make them think about this. I was like, yes, sounds great.
And then you went to new... You said what to the other investors?
I said, hey, Kleiner wrote it off. Would anyone else like to?
And?
One did.
Okay.
So that was, you know, for $100. So that was 100 times more expensive.
Who was it?
Lowercase.
Oh, Chris Sacca's company.
Yeah.
And partially, but...
Well, they stopped.
They stopped. Chris doesn't want to invest anymore, so he goes, let's just move on.
Yeah, they stopped that. Yeah, he invests through funds now. So.
Okay. Oh, wowee. Okay. And then the others are just sitting there. So how much, like, what's the liquidation preferences now? What's the number?
Now it's, I think it's around $2 million.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's like a seed funding company again.
Okay.
Roughly. Yeah.
All right. Let's get to, what are you going to say?
Well, it gave me a path, right? Like, I don't intend to sell the company for like $10 million or anything like that. But like, just the feeling that I had built something and like, its worth could have been more than the investment price, like... That, you know, it's like that gave me a lot of self-confidence, I think. And like all of a sudden, I think really overnight almost, right? Like I felt like, wow, I can work on Gumroad again. Because like the thing is with Gumroad, like every day, every minute I spent working or thinking about it, it's like, it's not going to come back to me, you know? It was hard to work on it like that.
And now you actually own enough of the company for it to matter.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about what you did to get it there. So one thing, monthly membership. What do you do? Create a monthly membership. What do you need to do to create a monthly membership? You put that together. It's out there. It helps steady things. You get to 10,000 breath of air.
Yes.
What's the next thing that you did to keep going?
The next thing we did is we just, honestly, not much. There was probably a year, 2 years, where I almost did not work on the product.
And what'd you do?
I drew, I wrote, and I painted.
Really?
Yeah, I could not. I had to disconnect. I moved to Provo, like you do.
How'd you end up in Provo?
I wanted to, well, it's a combination of things. One, San Francisco was so expensive. All my friends were raising gobs of money. Some of them were billionaires now, you know, like, it's not a healthy place to be if you're not doing a lot of that stuff. And if you sort of consider yourself like a measly failure and just smoke weed all the time. And so that was happening. So I was like, I don't want to be here anymore. Then Trump won the election. So that made it great. And then, so I started doing writing. I was painting and doing all this sort of other stuff. And like, I applied to this writing class that one of my favorite authors, Brandon Sanderson, teaches at BYU. And I got in. And that was like January, I don't know, 1st or something, he told me. Like, you gotta move to Provo. Like, it's class starts in like 2 weeks. So I was like, okay.
Is it inappropriate to ask you if you're Mormon?
I actually am Mormon now.
You are?
I'm trying it out.
It's a new thing.
Yeah, it's a new thing.
Did you have religion before?
I was brought up Muslim.
Okay.
Sort of, I didn't eat pork or anything like that until 16, 17-ish. And then I became agnostic. Or atheist, I don't know. Whatever the word people use is. So now I'm trying out Mormonism. Why not?
What do you mean by trying it out? Do you believe in it?
Belief is a tough word.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. I say I'm trying to have faith, right? But faith isn't sort of inherently illogical, I think. Right? Faith is like the absence of reason. So I'm trying.
But you can't cut off reason. So what is it about Mormonism that draws you?
I mean, honestly, a lot of it is like gonzo journalism in a way. Like, a lot of it, I think, was getting away from like the failure that I was and like trying to change everything about me, right? And honestly, I don't know. Like, people ask me, like, why? Like, Mormons ask me that. Like, why would you do that? Why would you become Mormon? It's weird. But I think a lot of it, I don't know. I did it, and I was like, I don't know, maybe.
When you say you did it, did you get. Is it baptized?
I got baptized.
You did?
Yes.
So you say, can you actually try it out when you're considering you were baptized?
I think everything's a trial.
Is your girlfriend Mormon?
She's Mormon.
Is that a big thing?
Oh, yeah. That definitely like, spurred it, right? But, like, she says it well. Like, don't let me be, what is it, like, I can't be the reason. I can be the motivation or something like that.
Okay.
I don't know whatever the quote is. But, yeah, I met with my, you know, so part of being baptized, I don't know how long you want to talk about this. It's going to be a whole episode. But part of being Mormon is you have to agree to these sort of questions when you get baptized, right? That's like, do you believe this? Do you believe that? Do you know this? They use the term no a lot. So I was like, there's no way. Like, when I first moved to Provo, I went to church, as you do, and I was like, there's this guy's nuts. They know all these crazy things. And so when I met with my missionaries, a friend sort of challenged me. He's like, I bet you, like, if you try to meet with them and see if you can get to a yes on these questions, honestly, don't lie. And so I met with them and I was like, I didn't answer yes, no. I was like, this is how I think about this, right? And like, and I sort of finagled my way through it.
Does your mom feel upset?
Not really, no. She's always says, as long as you're happy, I don't care.
Okay. So we're drinking whiskey.
Yeah.
I thought Mormons don't drink. They come in here, they drink water.
I'm trying.
You're what? Oh, you're trying.
I don't drink a lot.
Okay.
It's funny, when Mormons talk to me about that stuff, I always say, like, well, I used to drink this much. Now I drink this much. You want me to drink this much. Like, what's better? If I did become Mormon and drank this much?
Got it.
Right? I don't know. It's a really interesting question.
Are you okay finishing that so we can go to this one?
Oh, totally, yeah.
No, can you do it now?
Oh.
It's going to go off.
That's a lot.
Now you know how you raised $10 million.
By what?
He convinced the Mormons that drinking was okay.
Right, if he can do that, he can do anything.
I'm a good salesperson, not just.
And you don't have any guilt? Like, forget about guilt. Do you feel, like, more empowered because you believe in God?
Do I feel more empowered? I feel happier that I have faith, that I'm living sort of a life of faith.
You do?
Yeah, I think I do, yeah. But a lot of it is like, you know, it's not like a replacement. It's like I believe this on top of what I already. It's kind of a paradox. I don't know if that makes sense, right? But I'm open to a whole new set of experiences.
Can I see this? Yes. Is there part of you that just says, these guys are really rich and happy? They got happy kids. Forget, like, where it comes from, where it's going.
Yeah.
I want that. I want to be wealthy, happy, have happy kids.
Yeah.
Right?
There's a really great article I read about Mormonism and how insanely, like, the metrics are pretty great. But it makes the point that, like, is this possible if you don't believe this stuff? Because they, like, that lifestyle...
It's possible. But my brother ran an atheist organization in L.A. He kept saying the reason people go to religion is because they do things like charity drives and they have these ongoing ceremonies. We'll do it too. Do you know how hard it is to, like, recreate that?
So difficult. Sometimes you need the threat of hell.
I want to know, like, to get inside up at 8 in the morning. Self-interest is still there, right? There's still a part of you that thinks, I'm meant for greatness here. Maybe not now on this, like, this lifetime, but I'm here. These guys, the upside from this is good, right?
Yeah.
They're still there.
Yeah.
Okay. Totally. All right, can I tell you where this came from?
Yes.
This is Chris O'Halloran. He's a guy who's come here twice. Once for the I did this live event around Truman because I needed to focus. So I got a bunch of beads. I did an event. And I say, Tim Ferriss, can you come out and do, like, an event with me? And he goes, yeah, I'll come out. I'll speak live for you and help you out. So he comes out. Chris comes here all the way from Australia.
Wow.
I go, wow, that's amazing. And then he brings me this. This is the second bottle he brought.
You've been drinking too much, dude.
Thankfully, I can actually hold my alcohol
as a Mormon. Right now. I'm telling you.
Yeah, that's true. If I want, I love Provo.
I love it.
Yeah. You can still get alcohol. I would live there. I would almost be Mormon for, like, all the benefits that I just brought up. It's so nice.
Okay, pretty good community. Yeah.
So he comes over with this. This is the only Tasmanian whiskey I ever heard of. People from Australia go, "What the hell? We have a whiskey?" They do. And this is another reason why I want to travel the world. It's so interesting that there's a new thing that I never experienced and that none of us know. So we're going to try it. Can you guys down your alcohol or do you need another?
A little bit.
Another bit. Okay. Here's what we're going to try. This is the only whiskey that I'm going to pour a little bit, not because I'm stingy about it, even though I don't know how I'm going to get another bottle. But because this is the most polarizing whiskey you will ever have. I mean, people love it and hate it instantly. And everybody has a different feel for what it is. I'll read the name of it from the label in a moment. Everybody has a different set of, like, flavor that comes from this whiskey. And if you're doing whiskey tasting at all, which you should, or tasting as opposed to a thing, but don't have whiskey, have whiskey tasting that people try, this is the one to bring out because it is so different. Okay, this is Hellery's Road Distillery, Tasmania. Single malt, single peated, slightly peated. Devin, are you bringing slightly a whiskey peated. Bottle over? I mean, a glass over?
Oh, I can, sure.
Do it.
All
right. I wish I could pop this over into everybody's hands. I highly advocate whiskey night, scotch night, whatever it is. And I think that what you should do is always have a set of different types of whiskeys to give people something to taste. Now, I'll be honest. I love tasting it. Most people don't give a rip. Hey, this is Devin. Devin, can you go on camera?
Yeah, I'm on camera.
Okay.
You're the Jamie.
Your hands on camera.
Joe Rogan's podcast. That's you now.
That's right.
You're Devin.
Most people, I'm glad that I like hanging out with Devin a little too much. Like, he and I will talk forever because we're going to be traveling all over the world. Can you imagine if you didn't have anything to say to him? Or if it was awkward?
So do we raise
come
a toast?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's raise a toast. Good call. Cheers, everyone. Cheers.
Cheers.
To $10,000 in
coffee. Yeah. The first 10K.
I hope.
What do you think?
That's weird.
Right?
I feel like I'm chewing on a plant leaf.
Eucalyptus.
What do you feel from that?
I like it. The first second. Don't like the second.
What about the third second?
It's just... The second second, I don't like it. But the first second tastes really nice.
It's good.
Yeah?
I like it.
I want that on a bottle. The first second tastes really nice.
Yeah.
So we'll see it the first second. I haven't gotten over the second yet.
I poured it over the weekend. We did, like, a kids thing.
It's, like, sweet now. It's like caramel now.
Yeah, I don't taste that. Weird. My friend Johnny Chan drank it. He said, tastes like champagne. Everyone has a different...
I can taste that.
You can taste that?
Yeah. A little sweet. It's interesting.
Right. So, like, there's all this stuff all over the world. I never even tasted. Thanks, Chris. I was asking you what you did. Is it, if I'm taking away stuff from this, number one,
yeah.
I feel like monthly recurring is the only way to survive.
It's literally the only way to survive. At the end of the day, every business does that.
Right. Proof does monthly recurring. What's the company? Startups. All your startups do monthly recurring. If a company comes to your accelerator and they don't have monthly recurring, do you even work with them?
No.
What is the company? Really? Accelerator is called UPEKKA?
Yes.
UPEKKHA.
That's right.
And you will only deal with people who are SaaS. Monthly recurring, right. So that's one.
I didn't know how you would sleep at night with a monthly recurring.
Right, because you have to keep.
That's why.
Yeah. Do you still smoke weed? No.
A Mormon, come on.
It's tricky whiskey. So monthly recurring, number one. Do you ever feel, by the way, that you're not giving your customers monthly recurring? Maybe you need to give them that, too?
Yeah, actually, this year we're gonna really invest in subscription business.
So that they could also have something that... Okay, so monthly recurring was one.
Yeah.
Is it weird for me to take away that, like, that faith helped you, too?
Faith? I mean, yeah, it did. I mean, even before I was baptized, like, faith, yeah, it's super important. I mean, delusional faith, almost.
Delusional.
Right? Yeah, I mean, I was... down and out. And
you, so you were delusional before you started. And as in the beginning, you lost a delusion and now you're a bit different delusional, and that's good. Yeah, I'm with you on this, right?
I'm trying to follow that train of thought, but yeah, I think so.
Delusional before, you lost your delusion, you said, you realize you're right, you're re-delusional, and that's good. Okay. Give me one or two more things that you did to get you up. Cutting expenses, of course. What else? Give me two.
Yeah,
more.
I mean, that was huge. Honestly, like, just you shrink the team, you get rid of the office, the great thing about, you know, I remember people would ask me, like, how is Gumroad still alive? Like what happens when you fire almost everybody? And, like, the great thing about software is, like, the software keeps softwaring, you know, it keeps going. That's great, right? Like, while you sleep, if you're sleeping, like, it's still going. And, yeah, I mean, honestly, like, it was almost, like, simple, like, you cut costs like a lot. You launch a premium service that gets, you know, to $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 a month. You're profitable.
Yeah. Let's close it out with you. This is Persona. So, Persona, Dave, AZ, if you guys want to close it out.
So go ahead. One question I had is, you know, you basically spent $10 million building this business.
Yeah.
Right? And then you were... the happiest you seem to have been, based on your body language, seems to have been when you hit the $10,000 in profit.
Yeah.
Right?
I
can literally see whenever, you know, Andrew asks you a question about before profitability, your body is like tensing up.
That's so weird.
And then
but
after,
true, yeah, totally.
It's like he's relaxing. Do you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so it's just hard for me to understand because I don't know your product.
Yeah.
Would you have built it with less money, knowing what you know now?
Yeah.
Would you build a different?
And that's my question. Yeah. What would you do? Just looking back.
Looking back.
Hindsight 2020.
Yeah.
What would you do?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we're at $100,000 in profit a month now, right? And I'm not saying that we built this phenomenal.
$100,000 in profit a month.
Yeah, a month. Yeah.
$1.2 million a year.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
That's really good.
Growing.
Okay. Yeah.
That's good.
And the thing is, it's always been growing. Like all that variable cost stuff is—it's just the internals, the fixed cost. That stuff has shifted, like, and really messed with my head and stuff like that. I mean, honestly, like, a lot of people ask me, like, do you hate VCs? People like think, you know, like they fucked you over, like they like, you know, they deluded you, and like most of that delusion was self-inflicted. Honestly, like, I really think VCs. I raise from great VCs, you know, like they give you money and then they're gone. Like they're investing in the next thing. Like they're busy trying to find the next thing. That's their game, right? The game as a VC is basically you make deals and you raise more money from LPs. Like unless you become an Uber and then they're all over you and then you don't need them anymore. You're Uber, right? So I think I don't regret raising money. Honestly, I think we built a product like just sort of like, I don't think I could have done this intentionally, but I think if I did, it would have been like this mastermind, like evil sort of villain move. But I think we built this amazing product for creators, and we could not have done that without that much money. And I got to work with some amazing people. I got to be famous for a second in the Valley or whatever. And none of these things, frankly, I think it's wrong. I think our culture is obsessed with wealth, right? And it would be cool if you could get onto the front page of New York Times off your MRR, but that's not gonna happen. But it will take, you know, if you raise $30 million, it doesn't matter if you blow it the next month, you'll get in the New York Times, right? So I don't necessarily regret it, but I do regret that we place such an emphasis on wealth
And I did, right? Bill Gates was like one of my heroes, right? And I don't think it's a coincidence that he was like the world's richest person for a long time while I was growing up and figuring out what I wanted to do. But I do think, yeah, I think I wish I was more cognizant of some of the expectations that come with raising VC. And sort of on a personal level, I felt like a failure for a long period of time, right? And one of the things that really helped me shift my thinking recently is I stopped thinking of Gumroad like an investment of $10 million that I blew into $10,000 a month, which, you do the math, doesn't look good. But I started thinking about it, like, I took this much money and I turned it into $178 million. Just not for us, just for creators. You know? And ongoing, right? Every month, $5 million more. And so, yeah, it's a terrible investment. I will never pretend. I failed to build a billion-dollar company, 100%. I failed to do that. But I still built something pretty awesome. It's awesome. People love it. And, like, yeah, the VCs are not going to make 3X or 5X or even 1.01X.
Dave, do you regret taking money?
No.
You don't?
Mm-mm.
That was a very quick no. All right. I'm
just in the seed.
You might.
There's, like, no strings attached. You know, seed round's kind of just like, here's a check, like, email us if you want.
Do you regret all the people who copied you?
Well, it's not really mine to regret.
You're smiling. I run and I literally get angry at them. I don't know why that happens.
You're our biggest public defender.
Oh, man, we have clones at Gumroad. We have so many clones. And I just want to tell them. We started.
But it takes effort to clone you. Some of these guys are just copying exactly.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. We start publishing our numbers. And like one of the things it did is people stopped cloning us as much.
Really?
I think people were like, oh, shit, that's not that big of a business. Like,
really? Wait, so I'm surprised. So
I seriously, like, I want to email people that clone Gumroad, and I'm like, don't do it.
Please don't.
Seriously, it's a waste of your time. It's not worth it. It's not, like, take it from
me. What about the guy? There's always a guy who's going to come out with a WordPress plugin that does the same thing.
Yeah, right? It's free or cheap.
Right. But there's not that much margin in each thing.
You're not going to, like, there's a difference between, like, creating value and capturing value. And capturing value in this business when you're, like, working with independent creators, like, it's hard. It's a brutal. I mean, Patreon is killing it, but they're also... Like, you know, they're fine, but, like, they're not Square or Stripe, right? You know, like, you're picking a market that is sort of, by definition, very hard to monetize.
Do you have a question to close it out with?
Yeah, so, I just wanted to kind of come back to one of the things that you said earlier.
Sure.
You said you were too busy, heads down, to tell your mom that you laid people off.
Yeah.
But then you said you were busy smoking weed so that you'd forget that.
Yeah. I think busy was an excuse. Obviously, it would have taken 10 seconds to tell her, right? But I was like, when people say they're busy, what it means is like you're not important. You're like in my list of priorities, like you're down here, right? Like
when we call your mom right now on speaker.
Yeah, you want to?
Yeah,
I can do that.
Can you capture that?
Sure, let's do it.
You want to just dial it in here and we'll do speaker?
My mom is awesome, so.
She's in Singapore.
What time is it?
We'll do it.
It's
what time is it in Singapore?
It's 11 a.m. You don't need to talk to
her. Oh, wow. Look at you.
Don't worry. I will call her. She's active now on Facebook.
While he's doing this,
she is?
Yeah.
I had a funny thing on the clones. We had a clone that on their Twitter feed had our business address.
That's hilarious.
Why do you think that was?
They're a good. They were literally just going to become.
Just paste everything.
You're saying that for proof, there was someone who just probably they went out to some developer site and said, please copy them. And the developer site said, all right, you copy.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I'm going to copy.
I'll
yeah.
Everything.
Do you regret? Like, don't you think that the more popular, the more popular you are, the more people copy you?
Yeah. We see them more frequently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially like region by region. They do disappear. We had this too. People would be. I think what happens, right, is like they see Gumroad. They're like, this is an amazing product, but they're not a good business. So we're going to do that and be a great business somehow. And then so they try that.
And they don't have the brand.
I'll try again one more time.
Maybe text her and talk.
Yeah, I'll say, I'm doing an interview.
Ladies, we want to meet you.
You know, they see that and they're like, I'm going to. Like, this is a great product, and they didn't do it because they're dumb or I don't know. That's probably not what they're thinking.
Yeah.
Right? And then they do it and they're smarter. And then they realize like 2 years later, like, oh, that's why.
Yeah.
Except they didn't raise money, so they died.
Yeah.
I've seen that happen where I interview someone and because of the interview, they end up with a competitor who just,
oops.
Right? They go up to Upwork and they ask for a copy. It's really
hard. You just can't win being 10th.
I mean,
there's just no money left for 10th.
Seriously.
There's not money left for third.
There's not, frankly, there wasn't money left for first.
I don't know, 1.2.
I'm just kidding. No, you're right. Yeah.
You get to take
no, but it's a power law, right? So you look at number one.
It's nothing.
Which, let's say Gumroad is number one, right? 1.2. Like, what is number two? I don't know. I
disagree, right?
Sure.
If you take CRM today, if you take Salesforce, they're making $12 billion. The second CRM is okay.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
The second is fair.
It's okay.
I think there are
the 100th is okay,
like
too.
Right.
The 100th is okay, too.
I think that's
except
the number one is a million, right?
Number one is 10 billion.
Yeah, right. If number one is a million, like, sure, like 100K,
right?
So I think that's one thing, but I do think it depends on the market. When you build a consumer product, which is Gumroad, is this weird thing where it's like B2B, but it's also B2C, because, you know, creators are closer to just individuals, which is basically like the worst. You have the scale of B2B, you have like 1,000 customers.
And the marketing costs of...
That's wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's yeah, no, I think I don't, I'm not saying don't do it. And if you clone Gumroad and you build a better product, like, you deserve it. I'm not saying like everyone has the right to do that. But to me, like, I would prefer, if I were them, like, go pick a new thing. There's so much opportunity in the world. Like, there's so many problem spaces. Like, things are just getting started, you know?
Fail at something new, right?
Yeah, fail at something new or succeed at something. Yeah, it's just like, I like this. The top Gumroad creator made $890,429 in December. That's a monthly?
Yeah, in just December.
In just December.
$890,000.
So do you know what Bill Gates said?
What did Bill Gates say?
Because he wanted to be Bill Gates. Bill Gates believes that he became a billionaire because he made 1,000 people millionaires.
Bill Gates says that he became a billionaire because he made 1,000 people millionaires. I get that. I get,
he's on that road.
No, she's not. She hasn't.
Man. What do you call your mom? Mommy? No, you have a different
just mom.
Name. Just mom.
What's up, mom?
Yeah, mom. Are you from Singapore?
I grew up in Singapore primarily. Yeah, yeah.
Wow. I was having a hard time leaving Singapore.
Yeah.
It feels like it's
so clean.
Yeah. And you have no issues.
No one has
the world.
Guns, right?
All right.
Yeah.
I guess we'll end it over here. For anyone who wants to go check out your website, it's Gumroad. Is there like a product that you're selling on Gumroad right now? I was really hoping you're going
to
sell it.
Do I have products on Gumroad? I honestly want to, but the thing that I struggle with is like, I don't want to compete with my own user space. Because I could. Yeah. I'm like, and by the way, like, the number one product on Gumroad is mine.
I think you should do a book on like the top five things to do or things to do to sell digital products, how to make and sell a digital product, and then highlight your key people.
Yeah.
That would be interesting. You don't think so?
Maybe.
No, I do sell stuff. I sold some of my physical paintings on Gumroad. My icon, I launched Gumroad by selling something on Gumroad, which is still available.
So how do we see you on Gumroad?
Gumroad.com/Sahil.
S-A-H-I-L.
S-H-A-I-L.
S-A-H-I-L.
S-A-H-I-L. Yeah. Right. All right. I want to thank Sahil for doing this interview. I want to thank my two sponsors who made this interview happen. The first will host your website, right? It's called HostGator. Check them out at HostGator.com/Mixergy. And the second is the company that will help you hire phenomenal developers. I wonder what would happen if you went to them and you said, copy proof. You build it for them. They're not in that space. But if you need to hire a really phenomenal developer that Proof used to get themselves going, go check out toptal.com/Mixergy, and I will be running around the world. One marathon on every continent this year, doing interviews as I go. It's much, much harder to get people outside the U.S. to sit down and have this kind of conversation, really. I'm trying to get people in Mexico. That's my first country to go and do a marathon, and they're not big on talking about it. I told Dave before we started, when I was in Argentina, I asked this guy, can I do an interview with you? He said, no, maybe. I got on him. He said, yes. But he said, please don't tell people I'm in Argentina. I said, okay.
They need that American...
We're willing to talk about
cocksureness.
Like, now everyone knows how much money you make. You don't feel like a sense of, they know how big I am.
I do feel that, honestly, and it feels so good.
Like, from confidence. Like, you know.
Yeah, I remember this year, you know, did it. Silicon Valley, I don't know, we ended this interview like 30 minutes ago. But, like, Silicon Valley or whatever, like, it's you... You always, like, you kind of, like, puff up your chest, right? You always want to, like, pretend that you're bigger than you are if you're raising money, if you're hiring people. And so, like, it's frankly so awesome to just be like, this is how big we are. It's probably not as big as you thought.
Okay.
Maybe it's bigger. But that's it, you know? Everyone I meet is like, you make $120,000 a year. That's public information, right? It feels good.
All right. Come see me wherever I run and give me feedback on these interviews. See my runs. Runwithandrew.com,
powered by
HostGator.
Boom.
Thank you. And give me feedback on how Devin and I are doing with this recording, with this type of interview style. We're going to be flying all over the world interviewing people, and I love when people give me feedback. It's just, give my whole team feedback. Contact@mixergy.com. Contact@mixergy.com. Cool. Thanks. Bye, everyone. Look, I'm going to close it, so that means it's officially closed. The iPad is shut.
Awesome.
All right. Let's keep drinking. Cool. Devin Meadows, thank you.